Dear viewers of Auf Eins, I'm here on Guernsey Island to do an interview with Del Bigtree. He produced the film An Inconvenient Study, and it's an honor for me to interview him for Auf Eins.
Del, it's good to see you.
It's good to see you too, Maria. How are you doing?
Exciting. It's so exciting. Finally, the European premiere of An Inconvenient Study. Del, thank you. You did an awesome job with your team. I know it's been years of preparation, years of your hard work with your nonprofit, Informed Consent Action Network. Please, let us know how this whole film started and all the emotions you went through.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, in the many years I've been working in this space, investigating vaccines, you plant a bunch of seeds and you don't know what's going to turn into a tree, what's actually going to grow from that. I think An Inconvenient Study is definitely one of those things. I had totally given up on it as a story, but to talk about how it happened. Of course, my background is as a producer. I was a producer on the CBS talk show, The Doctors, where I won an Emmy Award and, you know, work on a show that made science and medicine entertainment. Then I stumbled upon a story of a whistleblower inside of the CDC named Dr. William Thompson, Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which is our, you know, biggest health regulatory, you know, agency. And this whistleblower came forward and said they were committing scientific fraud in the vaccine safety studies. My show wouldn't let me go near that topic. I went and said, look, I have a lead on a story of a whistleblower inside the CDC that's saying they're lying about the safety of vaccines. My show didn't want to mess with the CDC because they'd been very friendly to our show. They let us go in when there's a flu outbreak and we could report on the breaking news and what's happening. They wanted to hold that relationship. And also a lot of our sponsors were pharmaceutical for the show. You know, Merck making the MMR vaccine. And the heart of Dr. Thompson's story was that the MMR vaccine was potentially causing autism. And that was essentially, you know, the story was amazing because it reopened this, you know, dialogue, a discussion about are vaccines and autism connected. Anyway, I ended up making a documentary about that whistleblower called Vaxxed, which, you know, ignited a firestorm around the world. I think that really was launched. It probably wouldn't have been seen by anybody except that we got kicked out of Tribeca Film Festival back in 2000. It's actually, you know, end of 2015 going to 16 when all this happened. But getting kicked out of one of the biggest festivals in the world brought all this media attention, negative attention. But I come from an old school perspective of media, which is there's no such thing as bad press. And this was the worst press you could imagine. We're baby killers. This is the most reckless documentary. How could Tribeca even think about, you know, having a film like this? And, of course, at the center of that firestorm was Robert De Niro, arguably one of the biggest superstars in the world. It's his festival. He's one of the founders of Tribeca. And he came out publicly and said, I still stand by this film. He said it before we got kicked out. He said it after. He told the world, I have a child with autism, and my wife and I believe that the vaccines contributed to that. And so the media around that just exploded, and I ended up going on a tour with the film. And we spent a whole year on tour, and everywhere we went, there was just lines down the block. Every single day, we would pull into another town, and there'd be negative press. The local medical school or something would be taking out headlines. I mean, their attack upon us was merciless, and it was really stupid because they were giving us free advertising everywhere we went, and people's curiosity just kept being, what is it with this film? And so for an entire year, there was this, you know, these sold-out audiences. And something happened, like the second screening we ever did was in New York. We got picked up by a Angelica Film Center, like an art house. And I remember I saw the line down the block, and we were doing Q&As, you know, questions and answers after every single screening. And I just thought, who are these people that are coming to see this film? And so before the question and answer started, I just said, would everyone with a vaccine-injured child please stand up? And three-quarters of the room at least stood up. But probably it was a small theater, 150 seats, 120 people stood up. And the energy, it was like the the oxygen got sucked out of the room. And my documentary was about these injured families. I interviewed less than a dozen families, so I knew there was an issue, but I didn't realize it was like this big an issue. And, you know, it started a movement. That really started a movement around the world. People bring vax to where we're at. And so we sort of toured with that. And so I ended up asking that question. Every single screening, 5 screenings a day, at least 5 days a week for an entire year. And every time I asked that question, 3/4 of the room stood up. And I realized there's an ocean of injury out here. How was this covered up? How has this gotten this far and no one knows what's happening? And so that's what was happening in my life. And we were traveling up into Michigan and somebody reached out and said, hey, you're going to be in Michigan. I know the head of infectious disease at Henry Ford Health, which is one of our biggest research institutes in America and thus one of the biggest research institutes in the world. And I was like, sure, I'd love to meet them. His name was Dr. Marcus Zervos. And so we went out to dinner. This is 2016. And at dinner, I'll never forget, he sat down, very sweet guy. He was really just doing it as a favor to his friend. I guess they were very close and they'd worked together for many, many years. And so, but he said to me, you know, I watched your film, which I was surprised at. A lot of doctors wouldn't go near vax. They're just like, that's, you know. The press was so bad. There'd be nurses that would come, mostly nurses, not doctors, but they would say, we all were brought in our hospital together and said, they said to us, you are not to watch this movie, Vaxxed. I mean, can you imagine doing such a thing? Like an entire hospital brings everyone to a room and says, do not go watch this movie. I mean, I don't know how you don't watch that movie, right?
Think about the pink elephant, right?
Exactly. Don't think about pink elephants. Anyway, so he sat down and said, I watched your film. It was very compelling. He said, but you keep saying something. I've looked you up online. And he said, I see your YouTube videos everywhere. But you keep saying something that I found very offensive. You keep saying that they've never done the proper science on any of the vaccines to establish safety, to be, you know, say they're safe. He said, so I sit on the biggest databases in the world, and I went to get you that data so I could show you the science behind vaccines. And he said, and I'm shocked that I have to sit across from you and tell you you're right. He's like, we really haven't done any safety science. It's quite astounding. He said to me, but it doesn't mean that vaccines aren't safe. It just means we haven't proven they're safe. We can't really say they're safe. And I said, yeah, yet you do say they're safe perpetually, ad nauseum, every television. And anyone that dares to say we don't know if they're safe or question that just gets, you know, ridiculed. You could have, if you're a doctor, you'll lose your license over that statement. He's like, yeah, I know, it's really intense. He says, but look, I'm pro-vaccine. I don't know what I could do for you. And I said, well, you do a lot of science, right? He's like, yeah, I run the infectious disease department. I said, well, would you ever do a study comparing vaccinated to unvaccinated children? Just let's look at the health outcomes. Who's healthier? And he said, yeah, I would do that study. I was shocked, really, because it's something we've been asking for even before I came along. You know, this anti-vaccine movement or this medical freedom movement or whatever you want to call it, they've all been saying, all the parents of these injured children, if, you know, we're telling you it has to be vaccines, it's got to show up. If you did a comparative study, we just don't believe. We're not meeting anyone that, you know, that's unvaccinated that has autistic kids. Like, we don't see it happening. Now, it doesn't mean it's not, but you would need to have a study to tease that out. So anyway, he agreed to do the study, and we ended the dinner. I said, well, I'm going to hold you to it. He said, great. And I said to him, you know, if you do this study, and it turns out the way I think it might, it could be really devastating to your career. I mean, you know, it's a lot of the industry will be upset with you. And he said, oh, I don't worry about those things. I follow the science where it leads me. And he said, and besides, I'm at retirement age, so all my career is almost over anyway. So it was 2016, you know, I would call him maybe twice a year, check in, you know, how's the study going, Dr. Zervos? So you know, And I haven't gotten to it yet. So by 2020, it was like 4 years, I finally said, hey, I'm going to be in Michigan. Let's get dinner. And I brought Aaron Seary, my attorney. At this point, I have a nonprofit. You know, after touring with Vaxxed, I started my own nonprofit so I could do a deeper investigation. Vaxxed was about one vaccine, MMR, and one issue, autism. But everywhere we were going, parents were lining up to tell their story. And I realized it wasn't just autism. Parents were saying, my daughter has been paralyzed ever since she got a Gardasil HBV vaccine. Or my baby died after a flu shot. Or the one I remember the most was people would say, we never got to the MMR vaccine. Our child regressed into autism after the DTaP vaccine, diphtheria, tetanus, acellular pertussis. I actually, anecdotally, in touring for an entire year, would say more people believe DTaP is what caused their autism than MMR. And my film was only about MMR, and MMR is the one we all hear about. So it was interesting that there was a different vaccine that really seems to be the one that people think is the culprit. Anyway, Aaron Seary has been bringing lawsuits against the government for us and has just an astounding, brilliant person. So I said, why don't we both go and have dinner with Zervos? And so we went and met with Dr. Zervos and really said, look, there's almost a civil war going on in this country over this vaccine safety issue now. And, you know, you should want to have the truth out there. If vaccines are so great, this would be the study to prove it. Just compare vaccinated to unvaccinated kids. And we left that dinner, and he essentially said, all right, you're right. I'm going to do it. So he did. He did this study. They have a really great database at Henry Ford Health, and they whittled through the millions of people in it but found about 20,000 kids that were all born into their system. So they had their health records from the moment they were born, about 18,500 kids, 2,000 of them unvaccinated. So a very robust, you know, group that would, you know, had the potential to be statistically significant on a whole host and range of issues in children's health. And by 2020, he did it that year and then suddenly refused to publish it, which was our only rule. We just said, no matter what, you publish it, you know. So now I'm calling him.
So was that a call? And he said, we finished the study?
Aaron called me and said they finished the study. He found he was more in direct contact. And I remember at some point I did get on a call with Dr. Zervos and said, why won't you publish it? And he said, Del, when I agreed to do this study, this is something that he said to me, when I agreed to do this study, I did not realize I would be agreeing to ending the vaccine program for children. I believe in that program. I said, what do you mean end the program? How bad is this study? He's like, it's really bad. I cannot explain it. I don't understand what we're looking at here. But I don't want to be the one that ends the vaccine program. So now I'm curious. And so I kept pressuring him, Aaron. We were all just like, you know, saying, you really need to publish this. This is important, you know. I still hadn't really seen the study. So by 2022, I feel like we were out. It had been 2 years of, you know, monkeying around with
knowing
him.
It's out there.
Knowing it's there and no one's going to see it.
Seeing the harm to the children around the world.
And so I did something I've never really done before, which is, I was going to be in Detroit speaking. I said, let's go get some dinner. And so I said, would you be available for dinner? I said, sure. And I wore hidden cameras and recording equipment. I don't know what I planned on doing with it, but I just thought this may be the only thing we ever get out of this study. So we went to dinner, and he hands me the study. And it's the heart of the film, An Inconvenient Study, is this undercover footage. Which makes the film incredibly unique, I think, because it's not like, unlike other films, it sets up the issue that we've never done placebo trials, that we've never really established these products are safe. There'd be only one way to figure out now, is there an issue with vaccines? We have to do a comparative study. And here it's been done, not by me, not by anyone would have considered to be anti-vax or anti-science. All of these, you know, slogans or, you know, names were called, but fine, this was a scientist proclaiming, you know, loudly that he's pro-vaccine. The reason he's not putting this study out is he's so pro-vaccine. So anyway, in that dinner, he, you know, it's interesting watching it now because people have asked me, you know, what was it like in the dinner? Did you know you had him? And the truth was, is when I left, I had no idea if what I'd recorded in any of these cameras or any of it, if it would make any sense, because I was so focused at the dinner trying to talk him into publishing this stuff. Just publish it. I tried humor. I tried, you know, pressure. I tried guilt. I mean, like, I threw everything at this guy.
The very good part was when you said to me, right? And then you could prove him that he said that.
Yes.
Right? And that was very important, I think.
The whole story, yeah. I told you, I said right to him, and this, mm-hmm. like I said, you said,
yeah.
You would publish it no matter what. I say, I told you that there would be pressure if this turned out the way I thought. And you said that wouldn't matter, that you were going to follow the data where it leads and that you were about to retire. And he says, yeah, I know. I said, so your energy's changed on that. And he says, yes, my energy has changed on that. And then I ask him questions like, is it a good study? It is a good study. Is there any way you could do this study better? He's like, I don't see how. And I think ultimately I ask him, you know, would you, in any other climate, in any other time where doctors weren't, is it, you know, what he is essentially saying, he's afraid. He's afraid to publish it because it'll be the end of him. It'll be the end of his career. It'll be the end of his legacy. And so I said, in any other climate, would you publish this just as it is? He says that I would publish this exactly as it is. So this is look, he's a world-renowned scientist. He's giving his feedback. And so
you even said it could be a Galileo.
I was like, you could be, this is a Galileo moment. You could change the world. This study, if you came forward and put this study out, we could begin a conversation that needs to happen, children in harm's way. And he admits to all of that. You see him. It's not like I'm twisting his arm. It's a really fascinating human study. When you watch, I think, like, you have to watch it yourself, but when you watch it, you realize that he's so conflicted. He knows this is important information. He knows it needs to be out there to the public. He's just like, I'm just not the one to do it. Find somebody else. And at one point he even says, I'm not a good person. I'm not a good person. I'm not the one that can do something like this. So anyway, I don't know if that footage would have ever seen the light of day. You know, it was, so now 2025, last year, I've given up on, I can't publish it. First of all, it'll undermine what it is. If I put it out, they'll be like, well, Del Bigtree, of course, manipulated this study, whatever. I didn't ever want my name to be a part of getting it published. It had to come out from their side, like, untouched. It is what it is. I didn't touch it. But they wouldn't publish it. And so Aaron, our attorney, ended up, he had a copy of the study. I'd gotten a copy when I was at that dinner, and he gave it to Senator Ron Johnson. And Senator Johnson, in the summer of 2025, probably was, I think it was July, right around there, July, might have been August, and he read the study and just was irate. He said, this is incredible, children in harm's way. I cannot accept that they are not publishing this study. He said, so I can publish it. He said, as a government, you know, he didn't have a copy. I was worried about copyright issues, too. He says, I can put it on the Senate website for the public good, as a statement for the public good, and let the public see it. And so Aaron called me and said, Ron Johnson's going to publish the Henry Ford study. I had just gotten back from taking a little time off. I'd gotten finished. I was director of communications for Robert Kennedy Jr.'s presidential campaign. It had been an intense 3 years. Finally was taking a little time with the kids, and I came back, and Aaron said, we have to have the movie ready in 2 months. I said, 2 months? Aaron, you can't make a movie that fast. In fact, I was a little more heated than that. Like, you know, Aaron doesn't like it when I tell him how to run a lawsuit. I'm not crazy about him deciding how much time I need to make a documentary. And so I made that clear, like, you're crazy, Aaron. I cannot make a good movie that way. Tell Ron to push this hearing. He's going to have a hearing around this study. And Aaron's like, we're going to have a movie. It has to be ready right at that time. And I said, tell him to push it to the spring. At least give me 6 months. And he said, Ron says he's running out of time. He doesn't know that he'll be able to have a hearing 6 months from now on this topic. So it's now or never. And so we ended up having to make the documentary in about 2 months. And I had sort of thought I just got to lower my bar on what I expect quality level. Like it's going to be, I mean, we're going to make the best movie we can, and it's going to be what's going to be. And I went out to a couple of sponsors to fund it, and I said, I don't know how good a documentary this is going to be, but if it's going to be any good, I really need help. I need to hire extra editors. We're going to be moving very quickly. I will say now that the film is finished. We released it in October. We released it at the Malibu Film Festival, and we won the festival, which was a great way to start. And immediately that night, I made it available to the whole public. I didn't want to waste time with booking theaters. I wanted this story out because the hearing had just happened and everything. And so we just said to the public, you know, here it is, take a look. I was at a screening just a few weeks ago, and I was watching it in California. And, you know, it's wild to watch something with an audience, but I genuinely watched and thought I wouldn't change a single frame of this film. It's perfect. I'm not bragging. I'm more amazed by that because of the speed with which we had to make it. But I also think it's why it turned out so well, because having such a short period of time, we had to be really efficient with our storytelling. Like, what story are we going to tell? And so every time, and I tend to be, as I think I've already proven here, long-winded, I want to prove every point I possibly can. But we didn't have time to do that. And so every time the film would, for instance, get off into, oh, we got to talk about COVID and the COVID pandemic and what happened there, you know, to explain where Dr. Zervos was, he was in the middle of that thing too. But as soon as we would start down that road, I'm like, oh, we don't have time. That's a whole other movie. And so after a day of editing, you'd be like, no, that's going to be way too much to cover with sound and music, and just cut that out. Cut it out. Let's stay focused on our story. Our story is just about what it took to get Henry Ford to do this study, why this study is so important, and what they found. And so the film ends up being, I think, just so clear. It makes its point with such clarity and really proves itself the way you want it to. I had a friend, a really good friend I grew up with, who's always been one of my biggest critics. He said, this is the best thing I've ever seen you make. He said, I usually come away thinking, yeah, but, you know, you didn't, the argument could be made here, or you didn't cover this argument. He said, I found in this film, every time I was thinking that, well, yeah, but you would immediately address what would be a question. And I do think we'd go out of our way to say what the flaws that have been pointed out in this study. We are not hiding anything. We are completely transparent on what the study is and what the study is not. And we also make it clear that this single study does not prove that vaccines are causing this chronic disease epidemic, although that is the heart of what, you know, the stats look terrible. They look terrible for the vaccinated. So very quickly, what it found was that the overall conclusion of the paper is that you are 2.5 times more likely to have a chronic disease if you've been vaccinated compared to those that didn't receive any vaccines. 6 times more likely to have a neurodevelopmental disorder. 6 times more likely to have an autoimmune disease. So huge. We're not talking 60%. We're talking 500%, 600% more increased risk. And the study does a timed forecast that over 10 years, you know, what is the likelihood that you would have chronic disease? 57% of the vaccinated by 10 years old are going to have a chronic disease. And the unvaccinated was only 17%. It's massive. I mean, it's absolutely massive. But I make the point in the film that it's a retrospective study that doesn't have all the controls you want in a study to, you know, nail it to the wall. But so you're always going to have questions about it. But you can see even in the study itself, Zervos addresses, you can tell he's trying to bring these numbers down. He's using Cox proportional hazards and things that are being as conservative as you could be, and to the benefit of the vaccinated group, to try and lower the numbers. And he's testing reasons this might have happened. Well, maybe it's because the unvaccinated kids don't go to the doctor as often. They're not being diagnosed. Yet they then do a test on that and find that, true, your unvaccinated kids are only going to the doctor once a year. But they said, so let's limit it. You have to have gone to the doctor at least, you know, twice a year. Let's see if that changes anything. And then they also looked at, in the unvaccinated group, if they have asthma or any of the serious illnesses that would be considered chronic disease, when they look at the unvaccinated kids that were having those issues, they were seeing the doctors five times a year, which shows that if you're sick, you're going to the doctor. It's not that they're, you know, we're not seeing them. And so just lots of things like that. It's really a damning study. And what I say in the film, though, is, you know, this doesn't prove, it's one study. But it happens to be one of about, there's nearly a dozen, 10, depending on who you talk to. There's been around the world about 10 studies that have looked at this. I think this Henry Ford's the biggest. It's certainly the most sort of, you know, pro-vaccine group to ever do this. And so every single one of these studies is showing the same thing. The vaccinated are so much sicker than the unvaccinated. So to date, right now, all I can say is this. There has not been a single study anywhere in the world. I mean, to wrap your head around this. Nowhere in the world, not in England, not NHS, not CDC, not FDA, not Germany, not Belgium, not Japan, nowhere. Nowhere in the world is there a group of people that have compared the health outcomes of vaccinated children to unvaccinated children and shown that the vaccinated are healthier. This is a study I think most people would assume has been done.
Of course, and you would think it's out there, and you would think that's the first thing they wave in your face if they have it. Yeah.
I mean, since the moment there was an Andy Wakefield, the moment there's a question, well, let's just compare vaccinated to unvaccinated and show the world we're right. Why hasn't that happened? Or, as I think I make it clear in the film, why has it never been shown? Because you have to assume it's happened. You have to assume it's not lost on every scientist in the world, everyone that is frustrated with the anti-vaccine movement, they want to call it, or the medical freedom movement. The fastest way to shut that movement up, the fastest way to undermine Robert Kennedy Jr., to stop him from becoming HHS secretary, is to just do a study. Say, here's the vaccinated, here's the unvaccinated, you're all a bunch of crazy people, the vaccinated are healthier.
It's a good point. I've never thought about it. Maybe there's like 50 of such studies around the world. Yeah.
And there has to be thousands of these studies.
Burnt them, yeah.
Why have we never seen one?
Right.
Right? Because it's the simplest study to do. It's the one that would make the most sense. And it would end this conversation forever. And instead of doing it, what they do is what they're doing now. They'll attack the ones that are done. Well, that wasn't done right. Fine. Do your own. And that's all the point I'm making with this film. Don't poke holes in this study. I can poke holes in any study. Do your version of this and show me you can get a different result. I'm open to it because that's what I said to Dr. Zervos. I didn't tell him how to do the study. I just said, compare these two groups of kids. You say you're pro-vaccine, prove it. So he attempted to do this study and it did not turn out well at all. Okay? And so I don't know what to say. I wasn't in there. All I know is we all assume that bias affects science. I think that's why I find it ironic that the argument against Robert Kennedy Jr. right now is he's going to manipulate the science. He's going to make it turn out the way he wants it. Oh, so having a bias can affect how the science is done? Then you've just proven my point. My problem with the science around vaccines is it's only ever done by people that are just like bowing down to it as the greatest invention of the 20th century. That's who keeps doing the science. I don't trust that. That's not how we do science. I want the people that don't believe in it. Is there any way to do a study that makes it look bad? You know, if there is, if it is possible to even do that, now we're looking at science. Now Pokal, like, how do we find a balance here? But all the science has been being done by one side only, mostly completely funded by the pharmaceutical industry that's making billions of dollars
big
off of it.
Conflict of interest.
Huge. Yeah. Every study that you look at is funded by pharma. So, and we're going to trust the science. I don't trust any science done by the people making money off of it.
And for example, the European Medicine Agency gets 90% of their budget comes from the industry.
And the CDC has a nonprofit arm that takes in tons of funding from pharma. It's regulatory capture. Our government agencies are owned by the pharmaceutical industry.
Absolutely. And conflict of interest and fraud in science costs human lives. And that's,
I believe it is. I believe this vaccine program, I honestly will say this is the biggest mistake that's ever been made in science.
So in a perfect world, what would be the next steps for the government?
Yeah, in
officials?
A perfect world.
Yeah.
Immediately. And this is happening. I mean, at least it's being called out. Dr. Peter Gutcha, who is one of the founders of Cochrane, which is, you know, used to be, and when it was founded, that's turned into a mess too, because it's now taking pharmaceutical funding. It was an independent group of scientists that were questioning how good science was, and they raised the bar on great science. And Peter Gutcha, who I've always respected, you know, looked at this study, and he said, "I've seen Henry Ford's complaint." By the way, they did complain. They threatened a lawsuit against me and defamation and things like
cease
that.
Cease and desist letter.
Cease and desist letter we received before the film came out.
Is that still ongoing?
They haven't brought a lawsuit. And I think part of the problem is that they didn't know when they sent that letter that I had the head of the study, the head of their infectious disease department, on camera. It wasn't my opinion. You know, what they're saying is, you know, that I shouldn't say that the study wasn't published because of the results, which is what the film, you know, what it implies. But I don't say, I mean, I don't, I'm not the one that says it's because of the results. Zervo says it.
Right.
And so they didn't know that. They thought it was my opinion and that they could scare me back. But my opinion is based on exactly what your head of infectious disease said. And I have him on camera saying it. So it's really hard to bring defamation when you can't defame yourself, is essentially what
they do.
What that was happening in this film.
And isn't it interesting that also Dr. Servus did a study on hydroxychloroquine?
Yes.
Talking about, for short, about COVID times. So what happened there?
So, I mean, look, what I liked about Zervos is he was a guy who was willing to do good science. He had been one of the scientists in the middle of the Flint, Michigan, had a water crisis where they had Legionnaire's disease and lead in the pipes. They had brought, I think, an old water plant back online, and that water was going to poor neighborhoods, and everyone was getting sick, or a lot of people were getting sick.
Some even died, I heard.
And he was a scientist that went and started doing the research and the science around it. And the health department was corrupt. And they were saying there's not a problem here. So Zervo stood up against the health department. And people lost their jobs. I don't know if anyone went to jail, but it got close. But he stood for the people. And then in the middle of COVID, he oversaw a hydroxychloroquine study that showed inside their hospital system during COVID a 50% reduction in the risk of death to the patients that were receiving hydroxychloroquine. It was a really good study, and they looked at it many different ways, with azithromycin, without azithromycin. There's been attacks on that study. And he says it in the film. He says it in this dinner that I think he had had enough with being attacked. And so by the time this study, and he was already sitting on this study, by the way, while all that was happening. It's probably why it never saw the light of day. He's like, I can't be attacked one more time. And it's sad, you know, because I think this is more important than all of it. This is literally the future of our species is hanging in the balance. So, you know.
And how clear the film is, I think, is a perfect way now for parents, for doctors to look at it. Just look at it, right?
Yeah.
And then as it's so clear, you can really tell all the people to just watch it, because make your own minds after you saw it, right?
Correct.
And I do think people's minds get changed on the subject now that this film is out there.
Yeah.
And
it's really what I love about it. People, we're getting thousands and thousands of letters and emails, and a lot of it says the same thing, that, you know, I knew this issue, but I couldn't talk my wife or my husband or my brother or my sister or my mom, my dad, coworkers that I've been trying to talk to about this wouldn't listen to me. They watched this film and it has changed their minds. We're nearing about 100 million views, somewhere in that range worldwide now. It's very exciting. I've seen it now debated in the Australian Parliament. I've seen, you know, politicians all around the world. I have a friend that's a location scout for Hollywood films in Hollywood. And he called me and said, I was just scouting a new mansion in Beverly Hills for a film. And I realized the person that owned the house was a doctor. And he said, so I just asked him, have you heard of the Henry Ford health study on vaccinations? And he said, the doctor said, yes, I've read the study. In fact, you know, I'm in the Kaiser Permanente system. It's being passed between all of us. We're all discussing it. He's like, I don't know what, he didn't know who my friend was or that he knew me or anything. But he just said, I will say our confidence around vaccines is waning. We're all starting to wonder, are we missing something here? So I think that we're watching the change happening.
Yeah.
The truth really is starting to get out.
We do see, though, here in Europe that, you know, whatever our people can do here, like people that founded organizations way before COVID to raise awareness about vaccine injury. I think this film finally is something that we can share with the world. And I want to also, because people in Europe know you, people in the German-speaking world know you because of the film Vexed.
Yeah.
But I really, and I try to do my best when I do interviews to tell people that I watched The High Wire during the whole pandemic, yeah. You know, and I organized rallies and I was literally watching what Jeffrey Jackson brought up in the Jackson Report, what you guys discussed, your interview partner, whether it was Ryan Cole or Peter McCullough just said. 2 days later on rally stage, I just could bring all this information out there. And I just want to say thank you for your work that you're doing with your educational program, as you could call it, which is linked to Informed Consent Action Network. It's The High Wire. Can you tell us a little bit more? Because we have a lot of people in Europe that speak and understand English, of course. So probably they have never heard about The High Wire. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
So The High Wire, we have been doing one episode a week every Thursday since the very beginning of 2017. And the reason we started the show was it was the year after I had been touring with Vaxxed everywhere. I started a nonprofit, as I said, to investigate all the vaccines, not just MMR. I wanted to know, why are all these parents saying there's issues with all the vaccines? So I got a team of scientists around the world that could do investigations for me. And I hired the attorney I talked about, Aaron Seary, to sue our government. The problem in America is that you can't, you know, there's liability protection. You cannot sue the manufacturers of vaccines. It's the only product like it, totally protected by our government. And everywhere I went, everyone's like, there's no way. If you think about it, we learn most of the problems we learn about any drug that gets recalled or a product or even food, something that gets, you know, pulled off the market, it's because it loses in court. And usually, especially in the pharmaceutical industry, when a product loses in court, it's usually around safety. And what we discover through discovery in those court cases is that they always knew that their product had a problem. This happens all the time. It's happened with Vioxx, Fen-Phen, OxyContin, you know what I mean? All these issues recently, the one I think is so egregious and shocking is talcum powder. You know, the baby powder by Johnson & Johnson. this is a product we're sprinkling on our baby, you know, commercials where the babies just come out of the shower and put baby powder all over them. It's had asbestos in it the whole time. They knew it caused cancer the whole time. For 50 years, commercials put this on your naked babies. And then shower to shower, women getting out of showers, put it all over yourself. It was causing ovarian cancer. They knew it. When they finally get sued, you see the emails, internal emails, that they recognize from day one that apparently when you mine for talc, which is, you know, a stone, that it's bound with asbestos. And there's no way to separate them. And they never told anybody. So then, of course, they lose. I think it was like a $3.5 billion lawsuit, something like that. It's huge. But that's happened over and over and over again. And every time they lose those cases, not because we didn't know, sorry, whoops, or something wrong with manufacturing. They lose these giant, you know, these giant payouts, billions, because they did know. And they hid it from the public. They made a calculated decision to say, by the time the public figures it out, we'll have made so much money, it won't matter. These multi-billion dollar losses don't matter. They're fine. They've already made hundreds of billions. But here's a product, here's a sector of the pharmaceutical industry that you can't sue on. Why would we give an industry that lies to us a whole group of products that you can't sue at all? So there's, you know, where we're brought in Aaron. If we can't sue the manufacturers, we're going to sue the government that's protecting them. What do they know? And that's when our nonprofit Informed Consent Action Network, we started suing the government, and we were winning.
Wonderful.
We were winning against FDA, CDC, Health and Human Services, but no one in the news would cover it.
No, of course, but you cover
so
it on your
I started my own show called The High Wire, thehighwire.com, for that reason. I wanted the world to see the lawsuits that we were winning. And from there, we started talking to the scientists that were starting to, or in the whistleblowers that were starting to come forward. And so, as you pointed out, by the time COVID changed the world. You know, COVID woke so many people up to what, you know, by, so 2017, by the time we hit COVID in 2000, you know, end of 2019, 2020, we were 3 years into our investigation. We knew how the game was played. We knew how it was rigged. We knew how they skip the proper safety science. We knew how they were going to lie about the efficacy and the safety because they'd done it on all the vaccines. So once, you know, President Trump said warp speed on the vaccine program, I sat my team down and said, for this we were born. Here it comes. Right. They're about to try to make the sausage in front of the public, and we're going to show the world. We're going to put a camera on it. And we're going to predict exactly what's going to happen here. And that's what happened. We went from 250,000 viewers every week for our weekly show to 7 million in the middle of COVID. And we've kept going. I think we're on episode 480 or something now, 480 episodes every single Thursday.
And thank you also for covering what was happening around the world, because I want to say thank you. You spread the word when we had a lockdown only for the unvaccinated in Austria, when we had the mandatory vaccination already in place. They put the law out there, never executed it though. But thank you. You interviewed me and you really showed the world what was happening in Austria, in Europe, in Australia. And you're still, you know, on so many topics. It's not just the vaccines. People should really watch The High Wire.
Thank you.
It's an awesome show. I was introduced to The High Wire by an Austrian molecular biologist who used to work for a pharmaceutical company in the swine flu vaccine program. She was a team leader, and she decided she has to leave that job. And she said, she spoke up. She did lectures on vaccines, 2000-something. She started 2017. I organized lectures with her, and she said, you have to watch Del Bigtree. And I can still remember, so for everybody who wants to tell people about you, it's like a big tree, it's a big baum. And so people probably remember that and then check out on your work, because I remember the day she told me, watch this show, and I watched it. That time it was still available on YouTube.
Yeah.
What a miracle, it disappeared there. But congratulations to your own platform, and that you stream live from your website, and it's just, you spread the word, and thank you to your awesome team. I know many of them. They're all amazing. And thank you especially to your family and to your wife and to your kids, because I know it's a lot of pressure on you guys when you do what you do. And as you said, we were born for this.
Yeah.
And I think we can definitely state that God and the good will prevail. And we have so much backwind right now. So that's definitely happening.
I agree. It's an amazing time. People are, I think, really starting to understand what's going on here. And I'm proud of the work. My team is amazing that made this movie. That it's why also we were able to make a movie that fast, because we basically make a movie every single week. It's,
yes,
you know, lots of science, lots of information. And I, you know, I love to be able to say the archive of The High Wire, I stand by it. We really haven't gotten any of it wrong. Everything we said about Max, everything that we reported from day one proved to be true. So we have a really good track record.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Del, for this wonderful interview. I'm looking forward to a lot of European screenings of
An
Inconvenient Study. We're working on that with a lot of people we're connected with. You'll definitely be also in New Zealand and Australia.
I'm looking forward
Great
to that.
Things are planned, and thank you again.
Thank you.
And for the viewers who are interested, The High Wire is live every Thursday evening at 8 p.m. Central European Time, thehighwire.com/watch. And you can find the film An Inconvenient Study on aninconvenientstudy.com for free. You can also find a German version there. Watch the film and share it widely. Thank you.